It's Song Talk Radio with Michael, Neil, Phil, and the gang.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the show. We are so glad you could join us here for some song talking. This is a little show where we talk about songwriting. We talk to our guests, they share tips and tricks and things they figured out along the way. You share your tips and tricks, and we share our tips and tricks, and hopefully, by the end of all this, we will get just a little bit better at writing songs. My name's Phil, and here are some folks. However, there is Mr. Neil Modi. How you doing, Neil?
I'm doing pretty good, and that's enough tricks, and you know, tricks are for kids, so they're great.
Thank you. And over there is Mr. Michael Proudfoot. How you doing, Michael?
I'm doing quite well, thank you. Yes, we had a good show last week, and I'm really looking forward to tonight's show. So, yeah, super pumped, having a great time.
Awesome.
And we only just begun.
We've only just begun. Don't forget out there that we really love to hear from you, the listener. So why don't you send us an email to feedback@songtalk.ca with any questions or comments you have on the show. Your emails make us very happy. And, you know, we do read each and every one. So we have some stuff to start off with. Neil, tell us about that meetup thing we just had.
Yeah, so the meetup we just had over the weekend, it was great. Of course, it was over Zoom, and we had a good turnout. There was about 8 or 9 people that decided to share their song. And as the host, I asked once again, and there were 2 people who were a little bit reluctant and shy at the beginning of the meetup. And they said, you know what, the song isn't even finished, but I'll share it anyway. And we're like, yeah, you know what, we love unfinished songs. And she sang it a cappella, and it was beautiful. And the other connection we made, this I've seen a couple people a few times from a songwriters group that's in Seattle. And there was 2 of them. There were hosts of this other songwriting group in Seattle, and they shared the link in the chat. And a bunch of us actually signed up to this other meetup group. And they do exactly what we do. They do songwriting circles, smaller. They do songwriting challenges. They do the whole kit and caboodle. And seems like a great group to join. So certainly we'll put that in the show notes to that other group, because I mean, you know, like our meetup group, we're getting people from other parts of Canada, from the U.S., from Australia, from England. So similarly, we can join groups that are supposed to be somewhere else when they were back in real life. But nowadays, anything goes and anywhere goes. So
we've gone international. It's great.
Yeah, gone global.
Neil, I wanted to ask you. Years ago, you used to go onto a website where you would collaborate with other musicians, but I couldn't remember which one it was.
Yeah, it was called, it used to be called the Muses Muse. So MUSE'S, second word, Muse, the Muses Muse. And that forum actually shut down, but the forum, some of the forum members built it up again. So now it's called Muse Songwriting.
Oh, okay.
Or Muse Songwriters, I think. So we'll put a link to that one as well, because it is very active still. I haven't been on it in quite a number of years, but it is quite active. It's a great place because there's a lot of lyricists on there who are looking for music, and vice versa, right? So it's a good way to team up. I've collaborated with a few people on there where I took, you know, someone's lyric, and then a whole bunch of us, you know, wrote a song based on that lyric. And it's interesting to see different people interpreting it different ways and whatever. So it's kind of cool.
Very cool. Mm.
Yeah, it's a great friendly forum for sure.
So we'll share that link too, I guess. Mm-hmm.
And we are still accepting submissions into our second annual songwriting challenge. Yep. And we've got some awesome entries so far. Michael, tell us about the songwriting challenge, what it's about, and all that stuff.
Well, as you said, this is the second annual one. So this time around, the challenge is to write a song that has the same chord progression the whole way through. And we 3 unveiled our response to that challenge last show. And it stimulated a lot of really interesting conversation, and I think was quite helpful. And we've certainly been getting good viewer mail about it. And coming up in February, we're going to do our listeners' answers to the challenge. We'll be featuring a show about that. And based on the submissions we've gotten so far, I think it's going to be a really fun and entertaining and informative show.
Absolutely.
So keep those songs coming in, please.
That's right. And we might have to do a couple of shows if we get enough, but because there's been quite a few. Yeah. But or maybe just have one really long show.
A really long show. I mean, and if you've written one and you'd like to submit it, send it to feedback@songtalk.ca, MP3 and a lyric sheet and your chord progression, whatever it was, would be very helpful. And
or a link to a SoundCloud page or something.
Yeah, like whatever the case may be. And also, if you can, include like a short paragraph about where the song came from, because obviously we can't have all our listeners on the show, but at least we can talk about a little bit about your process when we share your song.
That's right.
Sounds good.
And we had some feedback on our songs for the songwriting challenge. Mm-hmm. We got an email from Nico from Cologne, Germany. Mm-hmm. He writes, "Hi guys, I just listened to the first episode about the songwriting challenge. I had to go straight to the piano and work out what Phil was playing in his one chord progression song." Isn't that an oxymoron? I thought it was two, but there you go. Could it be? Well, just to let people know, I was having a struggle because I wrote it on bass and I couldn't quite figure out what the chords worked on the verse. Every time, like, it always sounded too major and there was always a bit of a minor sound in my head. Anyways, Nico said, could it be that the reason that the melody wouldn't fit the chord is because the progression is never actually moving from the one chord? He is simply playing the second minor chord against the same, also called pedal, tonic note, which produces a suspended one chord, so which would be a 2, 4, 6, or 9, 11, 13, resolving back to the initial tonic one chord. So that would be E, F sharp minor with an E bass, and then down to E. And by the way, it's a good song. Stop calling it strange.
Yeah. That was very good.
Yeah, the thing that occurred to me after I read Nico's email was like, yeah, you know what? In our efforts to understand what it is, sometimes we forget that what it is pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like if it sounds right, it's right. Who cares what it's called?
Yeah. And you guys got into a great
back and forth
dialogue about subdominance and all that stuff.
Yeah, because I wasn't hearing a pedal thing. You were clearly moving to an A major chord in my brain. when I sat down at the piano, I was trying to work out what it was. I'm like E, F sharp minor, A. It's a three.
But you know, when you hit the A, it's way too
poppy.
Major for what was going through my head.
Yeah, I suppose. And that's the weird thing about writing on bass is that it's ambiguous. It could be minor, it could be major. It really depends if you include the thirds in your bass line or not. So it's open to interpretation. Maybe that's an A minor chord. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was definitely a great challenge.
If only we had a bass player guitarist as a guest.
He also writes he hadn't realized there were so many songs with just two chords. I think I might have to go at it myself.
Yeah, because right after we did that challenge, a YouTuber I follow, what was his name? David Bennett. Anyway, he's a young piano playing, classically trained, it seems, musician, songwriter, and he went through a bunch of songs that only have two chords in their chord progressions, and there's 29 of them in his video, and he does talk about that, the sort of relationship between the dominant chord, the subdominant chord, and the tonic chord, and why the two chord progression songs tend to be 1-5 or 1-4 or 1-2.
Right, that's great. Yeah, we'll have a link to that in the show notes as well. And finally, I got a couple of emails about my Line 6 bass pod giving up the ghost. One person kindly offered to lend me theirs, and another one offering a great deal on his old one.
Oh.
But some good news, but I fixed it on the weekend. So I disassembled it, just 4 string screws. And after looking for some blown capacitors, I cleaned the two rotary pots on the bottom. Because they're kind of open to the world with some product called Detoxic. And it's all working now. So
nice.
Yeah, they're just built like tanks. So if this happens to you, feel free to unscrew some stuff and poke around, because it's kind of fun to fix things.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And now we are very pumped about our next guest.
Mm-hmm.
Kathy Valentine is a working musician and songwriter known for being part of the all-female band The Go-Go's. She wrote or co-wrote many of the band's most renowned songs, including Vacation and Head Over Heels. In addition to playing music and writing songs, she has worked as an actor, public speaker, and spokesperson and producer. In 2017, she created She Factory, an event series to raise money for women-centered nonprofits. She currently lives in her hometown of Austin, Texas, with her daughter, where she plays in bands and is completing her first college degree. Her new book, All I Ever Wanted, is a roller coaster of sex, drugs, and, of course, music. It's also a story of what it takes to find success and find yourself even when it all comes crashing down. And I might add, a very good read. So, Kathy Valentine, please start your video.
Welcome to the show, Kathy.
Hi.
Very honored to have you on the show.
Nice to be here with you all. Thank you.
I wanted to ask what it was like putting out a book into a publishing industry versus writing a song in the music industry, because they're kind of similar in some ways and different in others.
Well, a song, like, you can be a perfectionist on a song. You really can, you know. Eventually, you're going to ditch the song or you're going to finish it, and it's not like, you know, it's not like it's, I don't know. But with a book, you cannot be a perfectionist. You have to learn how to fill up pages with writing. You can't, like with a song, I can agonize over every line until I'm happy with it. If I had done that with my book, I'd still be writing it probably for the next 10 years. So it was a really educational process. I learned, and it's helped just like my songwriting helped my prose, that process has helped me as a songwriter, because I learned how to just kind of not be so, like it has to be perfect. Just spew it out. Just fill up the page, and then you can extract what's, you know, good and form it and shape it. And I've never been like that as a songwriter. I've never been a spewer. I'm somebody that I find it hard to move on to the next part until I've perfected where I'm in the song. You know, sometimes I'll leave it aside, but it's always at the back of my mind. If I don't have the bridge yet, or it's hard to get to the bridge, or if the chorus isn't there, if the title's not there, I go insane. Like, I cannot handle not. And so imagine writing a book. Like, I didn't have my title for my book. So I'm just like in this endless dark cave writing the book because I don't have a title. And, I just feel like the title gives you that. It's like that lighthouse. It's like the thing that you're moving towards. So what else? How can I answer that question? I think that, I think the lyrical sensibility was very helpful as a writer, as an author. One thing that was funny that happened when I turned in a draft to my editor, like a lot of times I would finish a paragraph with this zinger of a line, and then I would pick it back up right on the next paragraph in the next chapter. It's like I would do it like that purposefully. And my editor thought I was repeating myself. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, you just said that. You know, and I'm like, oh, no, you got a good line. You say it again.
You repeat, you know,
like a chorus.
Yeah, it was like, if this is a hook, I'm not just going to leave it there at the end of that paragraph. We're gonna hit him on the head with it again. So that was kind of funny. Like, I had to, like, explain that it was purposely done. It wasn't that I'd forgotten. And I got my way. So, yeah, they were wonderful compliments to just the overwriting, you know, skill set. And the thing that I really loved, I don't know, I'm sure you're aware of this, but I wrote a soundtrack to the book. And that's where it got really interesting for me to intersect and pull from the book to inform the songwriting, but to approach the songwriting more like a soundtrack where I could pick and choose when I wanted to use the conventions of songwriting.
The soundtrack came after the book was completed, or you wrote them in tandem?
No, I finished the book and then I started the soundtrack because number one, I felt like, okay, not every person that writes books can write songs. So this is a niche that, you know, I'm a strategist, if nothing else. And what, if I see a strength, I use it, you know, and if I see a weakness, I don't use it. And so I thought this is something that I can do that not every writer can do. And I had a book full of material for somebody that agonizes over lyrics. I had an entire book to draw from, and I never took anything verbatim out of the book. I might have, like, I didn't ever do spoken word over, but I might a little bit. I'd take passages, key phrases, rework them, make them more rhythmical, more lyrical. So anyway, that's another whole topic. I should have told you, I kind of just go. If you just heard me talking, I just go.
Yes.
You'll have to, like, butt in, make me stop.
What was the impetus for writing a book? What, where did that idea come from?
I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to, I'd been taking some, in my college classes, I'd taken some creative writing courses, fiction, and I felt like I was pretty good. And I thought, no one's going to really, if I just, oh, here I am with my novel, I thought it might be hard to get in the door or break the door down. Whereas with a memoir, it's like, number one, I had a very compelling story. Number two, there's not that many women who have chosen music for their entire lives. You know, it wasn't a hobby for me. It wasn't like, oh, this is fun, I'm going to be in a band in high school. This has been, I've been in bands for 45 years now, nonstop. I'm never not in a band until a pandemic came. But it took a pandemic to stop me from being in a band. So
a worldwide pandemic.
Yes. I felt like I had a compelling story. I felt like I do think women that choose music, those stories should be out there. And I felt like it would be a better entree into the realm of I'm a writer than here's my novel. Like, it's like if I can write a good memoir and show that I'm a good writer and that I have a voice that can get on the page and whatnot, then I think some of my readers will follow me and say, oh, I'd like to read more. That's, again, I'm a planner, and that was what I thought. It was like everything I do kind of has a method to it. But also, I wanted to tell my story, you know. I did want to tell it. I felt like it was a different story.
Yeah, it's a great story. A great recall, too, like of events that happened a long time ago, considering the length of time and perhaps the substances that occurred along the way. There's really nice details. And I'd say pick up this book and read it, because it's really interesting, especially the way you talk about your journey.
Thank you. Yeah. I had a lot of journals and file of faxes, you know, day planners that I'd put notes in, and I was able, and if I didn't remember it, I left it out. There's lots that I didn't write about because I didn't remember it.
Yeah, you certainly don't pull any punches in the book. It's very, you know, there's some stuff, not great stuff that happened. Mm-hmm. But I did want to say how much I enjoyed the structure. You had sort of shortish chapters, which is really good because it makes it, okay, I'll just do one more chapter.
Yes.
Well, I'll just do one more chapter. Mm-hmm. You wind up reading a lot longer. So I read it very quickly because it's kind of like that, you know. It's just, well, it's just another couple of pages. Well,
it's kind of like a great song. It keeps chugging along, right?
Yeah, and I did that purposefully too. I mean, partly because my attention span and my focus is not what it used to be. And I'm not sure if that's just, you know, technology and getting used to looking at things on the phone and Twitter, and or if it's age or being a mom, I'm not sure what it is. Maybe it's all of it. But I felt a lot of times I do things the way I would want it to be. So number one, I didn't want to be boring. I can't, you know, I'm not going to name any names, but I've picked up plenty of memoirs, and you know, after a while, I'm like, I don't care. I don't care. I'm bored. Bye. So I really didn't want that to be my book. I didn't want it to be boring. I wanted the pace to just chug along without sacrificing depth I felt like it was crafted with that in mind. I was like, how can I go fast, keep a pace, but still go be deep, you know, be deep.
I wanted to ask you, Kathy, about, because I really enjoyed the book. And to be honest, I didn't know a lot about the Go-Go's because I was like 9 years old when you guys like first hit and was buried in my subconscious. And I was like, wow. Yeah. But the thing that amazed me about reading your book too was how cooperative the band was. And if you can just talk about that for a little bit, about the songwriting in the context of a band, because you're always kind of collaborating and you're saying before how you don't sort of spew out a bunch of stuff and then refine it necessarily when you're writing a song. But I just wonder if, you know, like I've been in band situations before where it's just like you know, the band is just jamming a bunch of things and someone's singing some lyrics and then you end up with a whole pile of stuff and that, oh, this is pretty good. Let's refine that. Let's work on this. So I don't know, like what your experience as far as the songwriting in the Go-Go's or in other bands, have you always found that someone brings a draft of a song to the table before it gets rewritten, or do you ever like jam out something?
Yeah. I mean, in my band, the Go-Go's aren't big jammers, but in my other bands I've been in, we'll just play and play until we get a groove. And then, so I have done it that way. On my own, I will sit down sometimes just and start playing with beats and stuff. You know, I've been into doing it that way, but in the Go-Go's generally we would get together and just guitars and spiral notebooks. And, you know, that's still kind of my go-to. I do a lot more on the computer now in terms of just composing on the computer and just starting with nothing but a Pro Tools track. I do write more like that now. And it's added elements to my writing than just the guitar method has done. But yeah, we would sit down together and it's always nice to have a few things to bring in, you know, because otherwise starting from complete scratch can be, you know, a little daunting. So usually, you know, you'll bring in things that, and sometimes as we became more and more used to working with each other and having gone through a lot of things that writers go through together, I've even gone into situations saying, this is my core idea. We can work on this. If I don't like what we do, I'm keeping this core idea. You know, like sometimes you have to spell it out really clearly because, you know, there's nothing worse than having something that's like your little baby that you feel is kind of special, deciding to bring another writer in on it and having it not go somewhere with them and then feeling like you've lost your idea. So I've found, you know, we've become so inured or thick-skinned with each other. It doesn't really offend anybody, you know, and that's one thing I like about writing with the Go-Go's. Or my other long-time songwriting is a woman named Dominique Davalos, who I've worked with since 1992. And we've written dozens and dozens of cool songs. We just, they're not famous, but they're great songs. But I think that's one thing I learned is to like, you can bring one of your favorite ideas in and you can carve it out and say, if this doesn't go to the level that I think this should go, you know, I'm keeping what this part, and you have it documented on tape and you know, this is mine. And that way you can go and you can write it yourself. And then they can't come back and say, hey, wait a minute. You showed me that. That's my song too.
Right. Yeah.
I know that's not what you asked, but it just kind of went off there thinking about that. But yeah, we would sit together. It's nice to have some ideas together. Again, we have thick skins. It's in a room together. It's very easy. No, I don't like that. You know, somebody comes in and you know to just spit everything out. Even if, you know, sometimes I'll still say, I know this isn't good, but it might spur something, you know. Yeah. And you know, of course, now we have the phone. Before it used to be the cassette, but now it's the phone running all the time, the memo app.
Because yeah, I mean, I'm in a band myself, and I found that it is more productive and more, you get songs finished and actually like, yeah, pretty much finished and able to perform them and all that sort of stuff. If someone brings in at least a skeleton, some chords, some lyrics, a basic melody, and then the rest of the band can shape it, add stuff, take stuff away, whatever. But at least the core identity of the song is still intact. Then the band can have some fun with it, and it's great.
And
it is nice when every member of the band gets to contribute in that way, and it's not just
one person. Yeah. I mean, songwriting has been a big issue in the Go-Go's because, you know, the songwriters retain all the writing credit, which as it should be. I personally don't think anyone should have their name on a song if they didn't write it, but I'm very willing to split money up equally. You know, if you didn't write the song, but you're in my band, and we're all working to make this song happen, then I like splitting the money equal, but it's been an issue with us a lot. And what was I going to say? One of the things about it that kind of it's hard to reconcile with me is that everybody's bringing such their identity into the song, and it kind of gives it something special. And, you know, the voice, the singer that's, you know, I could sing We Got the Beat and be the lead singer of the Yo-Yos, and it might not be a hit song. You know, I'm not Belinda. I don't have that voice, and the Yo-Yos aren't the Go-Go's. So I see the picture, and I tried to go into that in my book because it's really a mystery to a lot of people, like why songwriting is an issue with bands and how difficult and it is. And there's no black and white. There's no right and wrong. It's really just, do you want your band to be happy and stay together, or do you want to have a bunch of problems?
Even outside of band context, like these days, even solo artists, they have 9, 10, 12, 20 songwriters behind them.
Yeah.
That everyone's, I don't know how they divvy up that, but one of my favorite bands here in Canada, Sloan, there are four songwriters and each of them sings lead on their own songs. And it's pretty clear who wrote what song, but as far as I know, I've read anyway, that when the royalties and stuff come in, they split everything equal, regardless of, I had five songs on the album, you only got three, all that sort of stuff. They just split everything.
I think that's a good way to be. I mean, you know, the problem with a band is it doesn't matter what one person thinks. It's what the majority thinks. And if you think one way and three think, you know, so, and somebody's always going to be unhappy if they don't get their way. So it's really difficult. But, I personally think if you're in the band, if you're all getting up to go do the interviews and you're all slogging it all around the country in the van and you're all working for the song, you know, and the way I do it in my other bands, it hasn't really been an issue because we haven't made the same amount of money. But in my bands, it's equal, except for the writing credit goes to the writers, but the money's always equal as long as you're in the band. If you leave the band, you know, there goes your one-fourth of the money.
I think the important thing in a band situation is to talk about that before you start, because, you know, everyone will assume everyone's thinking like me. And then when something happens, you find out it's not. And then that's when the problems start.
And we tried to do that in the Go-Go's. We had an arrangement. But the arrangement, when you've sold 4 million records and the money is like gets into these higher numbers, the arrangement can seem pretty – that seemed fair at the beginning can seem still like a lot of inequity. So it caused a lot of problems. And, you know, if we were still working today, it would probably still cause problems. Now we mainly just tour here and there. And we did do a new song for the documentary. And that was a nightmare writing it because we're all in different cities and it was all by email. So in a room, you can sit with someone and go, oh, I don't like that. But when you type out, I don't like that. It's not just sailing by and you're throwing out another idea. It's just like sitting there.
Yeah.
It was a little more difficult, you know, and a lot more offense was taken than had ever been taken when we wrote in a room together.
I guess you missed the tone is so important. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, or somebody would like, you'd send an MP3 of your idea and then somebody would take it and do something that they thought was great and send it back. I took your idea. This is what I do. And you're just like, what did you do to my song? Whereas if you're in a room together, that would never happen. Nobody could run off. Nobody's going to go off in the other room and take your idea and come back with a new recording of it. You know, they'll just throw out a few chords and say, what if we went there? And you can go, no, I don't like that. You know?
I was just wondering, has your writing process changed? I mean, you've been writing songs for a long time. Are you approaching songs differently now than you did from back then, or?
I haven't been. I mean, after the soundtrack, which was incredibly freeing as an artist, because I could do anything I wanted. It could be any style. It could be any format. I could have a hooky chorus, or I could not have a hooky chorus. I could have, you know, a bridge, or I could not. I mean, it was so much about interpreting the chapter that I was writing about that felt very freeing. So I haven't actually written a song since then. I did that at it came out in March. So I've been doing more like covers. I've been like taking old songs and redoing them. For it just been fun. It's been kind of, and adding new lyrics and kind of updating. And like a lot of the stuff I wrote in the Go-Go's, I wasn't as sophisticated, and I'm not saying it was bad, but I've got so much more knowledge, so much more, I'm so much more educated. And I feel that's something I always tell writers is read a lot, you know, read. Know a lot, you know, it makes your songs so much more interesting when you can touch on little concepts or ideas or theories. And it doesn't mean like you're trying to like have a song that reads like some, you know, dissertation, but it's just there. It adds a depth, I think. So some of the songs like in Beneath the Blue Sky, which was a Go-Go song on the third album, a lot of fans always say that's one of their favorite songs. And we never do it. We never do it. So I thought maybe I'll just do my own version of that and do it with my daughter. She's been playing guitar and singing. And I thought it would be a fun mom-daughter thing. And then when I looked at the lyrics, I was like, oh my God, there's nothing here. We go back to the first verse and it's just, it could be so much more. And so I found I didn't want to cover it until I expanded on it. So I've been having fun with that, but I'm looking, I do feel like writing. Oh, wait, what was my last? Oh no. The song I wrote, my favorite song I've written right before the book was, a song called, and that was in, what was that? I don't even remember, but it was called Hourglass. That's my favorite song I've written in a long time. And it's about, sobriety.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
I mean, certainly you're seeing things through a different lens. So you feel like maybe with that, dare I say, the punk aesthetic, that when these songs were originally written, you wanted a lack of sophistication that you wanted to sort of update them with. Is that
depends? It mainly just seems like Vacation is not sophisticated, but it's from the heart and it's real and it resonates with people and it's pure and authentic. So it's not necessarily sophistication I'm looking for. It's mainly just, is the song as good as it can be? I mean, I look at songs like property, like little real estate properties, and sometimes you can remodel them. You know, and sometimes you can strip them down to the studs and go back to the foundation. I mean, I have everything I've ever worked on because it's a little property. It's like a little shed that could be made into something, or it's a, you know, sometimes they're fixer uppers, you know. So I think it was more just like seeing a song that maybe need a little remodeling.
Cool. Well, we actually have Beneath the Blue Sky queued up. So shall we play that?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll take a listen and talk about it on the other side.
Okay, here we go.
A question for you. Oh, more music. So this remodeling, was it just lyrical or was it in other parts of the song as well?
Well, I played everything, so I remodeled the parts. I think I might have had to rearrange it a little bit, but the basic structure was the same. The chord progression was the same.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us an example of a lyric that you changed, like the before and after, if you can recall?
It wasn't that I think I just added on to. There wasn't anything there.
Okay.
Hey over there, what's going on? What? That was all there. I added, because there was like two verses, and then it's repeated the first verse.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it was just not enough.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I don't start pulling things out.
Because
I'm so used to this now. I'm so used to this version now.
Yeah, for sure.
It must have been nice to do it with your daughter, too. That must have been
fun. It was so cool. And making the video, and it was really fun. She's going to college in the fall, so it was like, I hope I have time to do one or two more with her before she leaves. So
that's great. So is the video out yet?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. Okay. under my YouTube Kathy Valentine station. And I made the video too. That's like what I've done in the pandemic is learn new things.
Yeah, you've been very productive.
I think that's a really interesting perspective to see songs that you've written as living, breathing things. Mm-hmm. Like they're malleable. They're not, because a lot of songwriters, I myself am guilty of this. I don't want to say guilty of this, but I, you know, it's something I wrote, you know, 10 years ago. That was then. That was a time and place. It is what it is. And I don't feel the need to revisit any of that stuff. But it's really fascinating to hear about the notion that, yeah, they can always be changed.
Well, especially, I mean, maybe the situation, I mean, like another song, one of my first songs I wrote when I moved to LA, when I first started finding songwriting as being my friend and my therapy and the thing that would get me through tough situations was Can't Stop the World. And Can't Stop the World ended up being on the first Go-Go's album, which was really important to me because I was the last person to join the band. Jane and Charlotte had written a wonderful body of work. And there was no reason to have a song on the record. But right at the end of the recording, the producer said, I want to add one more song. I don't want any more of the songs you guys have. Here's a cover. We're like, no, we don't want to do a cover. We only want band written songs. And my song ended up being on there. But anyway, I've redone lyrics to that and I haven't cut it yet, but a band here in Austin cut it. It's called Can't Stop the World still with the new lyrics that I added. And they were a Latina band and I wanted them to sing it. Go back and forth in Spanish.
In Spanish, yeah.
And, but they chose to just do it in English. But yeah, I wrote some good verses to that too. Yeah, I do think they're living and breathing. I mean, why not? Why shouldn't you be able to? It's a property. It's yours. You own it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes it gives it a bit of life. And you know, if it's recorded and someone likes the previous recording, they can just stick with that. Or
yeah,
you know?
It's not like you've destroyed anything.
Yeah. You have to be George.
It's not like you erased the previous version.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of things about the books I wanted to mention is how you communicated how devastating a band breakup can be. And people who haven't been in bands don't understand that. And it's just, you know, for all of us that have gone through that, it's just, because it is part of your life. It's part of who you are. And suddenly you're just kind of, you know, it's a tough change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the reasons I put so much of the dark stuff from my adolescence was I didn't think my reader would really understand, number one, how important the band was to me, and number two, how devastating the loss was to me without having that context of where I'd come from and how I had, I mean, when I joined the Go-Go's, had been my goal and my dream for years. That was my, and when I got it, I was, you know, almost to a fault, desperate and compulsive to keep it because it was my family. It felt like my sisters, my family, my way to belong, my way to live my dream, my security, my financial security, my way to take care of my mom. I mean, it was my identity. I mean, it was everything. And I don't think I'd ever felt more lost in my life. And that's a compelling part of the story too, is, and so many people have told me that they relate to that, like whether it was from being in a relationship with somebody that maybe they lost their sense of self. But ultimately that's what I did. I lost myself because it felt like everything. And I think a really important part of the journey was finding myself again after that. And I swore I would never do that again. And from that time on, you know, the Go-Go's have done a lot, but I've always maintained being in other bands, doing my other things. It's I would never do that again where I just like total immersion.
Yeah. It's losing yourself. It's also you tie up your value of yourself in that. So when you're rejected in that way, I mean, I was kicked out of a band once. We were only together for like 2 weeks, but it still hurt. It was like, oh, I'm not good enough for you guys. Okay.
it's so bad. I mean, I've had two times in my life where I told someone that I didn't want to work with them. I've been on the other end and, you know, I think they're still mad at me. It's like people take it very personally. You know?
Yeah.
A band is a lot
difficult
like
thing when your emotions and your creativity and everything is all wound up together. It's Absolutely. Not like, you know, you were working on someone's, you know, construction site and you got let go. You're putting your heart and soul into something and then you get cut off from that. It's much more difficult.
Yeah.
And I thought you communicated it really well. It was very
difficult
to read at that point.
Yeah. I think one of the hardest lessons of just life in general, whether you're an artist or a writer or just a person is, and I talk about this a lot, is like this judgment of knowing, being confident and being sure of your abilities and your capabilities and keeping that intact as opposed to pushing further, as opposed to knowing that it's time to maybe go pivot. It's really a judgment call, you know, like now, I mean, I have so much confidence in my abilities as a musician, as a writer, as an arranger. If I show somebody a song and they don't like it, like to me, it just means that they don't have the same taste as me. You know, it just means like, okay, we are on two different pages. Yeah. At the same time, I'm also totally receptive to hearing how they think it could be better and ready for that too. But if I don't hear an improvement, then I just think, okay, we don't have the same taste. You know, we don't judge things the same way. But it took a long time to get there. I mean, I was the whole time I was in the Go-Go's, I was much more about fronting and a bravado and a confidence that I really didn't feel. I was actually very insecure as a writer. I gave away much more of my song Vacation than I should have because I felt more confident about the song that it had two other writers that, you know, that I kind of just gave away more than I should have, you know, because I was insecure. I was insecure about my song Can't Stop the World on the first album. I felt like, oh, this is the crummy one. All the other ones are good. It took years and years before I was like, no, my song closes that album out in a great way. And it's on a lot of fan favorites. And I don't think it was until I started working on my own. So like being in a band is fantastic and I loved it, but it can also, like somebody, one of you were just saying, it can also almost keep you down in a way, you know, it's like not keep you down, but it's like, I would tell anybody, don't just express yourself in that context, because I don't think until I made my first solo album in 2005, that I finally went, whoa, you're good, you know, and really felt it. And from that point on, once you have that feeling, nothing can change it or shake it. Like if you're always waiting for people to like what you do, you're always going to be kind of dependent on that. But once you feel it inside, it's kind of like the best gift you can give yourself, because then you can take criticism, you can take suggestions, you can go back to the drawing board at someone else's suggestion without it damaging that belief in yourself. So a lot of times people say, what would you do differently? And I think if I could go back and do it differently, I would have all along, not because I want to be a star or a soul. I never wanted that. I just always wanted to be the Keith in a band. You know, I always wanted to just be, I didn't want to be the front person, but I think in wanting that, I let it overshadow my talent. You know, I like the dream of wanting that kind of was more important to me than really discovering what I could do and what my abilities were. Luckily, I've lived long enough to find out, and I still have enough time to still get to do that. But, you know, like I said, I love being in a band. I'll always be in a band, but I would trade being in a band to have the feeling. Because another thing, when you have that, it's like, it doesn't matter if it's successful or not. I mean, I've written songs that maybe a couple thousand people have heard, you know, and yet I'm so proud, you know, I'm so proud of them. And what's that?
Ah, well, that's our band.
Oh, cool.
That's them telling us
we're being played off.
Oh, wow.
It's our outro.
Because that's all the time we have here.
How rude! Okay, well, I guess we left off in a good place then.
It was great.
Yeah.
We celebrate the year on Song Talk Radio. Special thanks to Kathy Valentine for stopping by.
Thank you so much, Kathy.
How can our listeners get a copy of All I Ever Wanted?
Well, I always say support indie bookstores if you can, but if you can't, don't let that stop you from supporting or getting it from whatever behemoth you want to. And it's online. There's an audio book that comes with the soundtrack and underscoring. It's super cool.
Oh,
brilliant. That's neat.
Yeah, the audio book.
I imagine you do. You read it, right? You
read the audio book, right? And it's got all the music, and people love it.
Awesome.
And I'm on Twitter, and I'm on Instagram, and I like meeting people, so find me.
And how do people get more of your music?
I like Bandcamp is my favorite outlet, but I'm on all of them. I'm everywhere, but I love Bandcamp. I think it's the most artist-friendly platform.
Yeah. All right. And listeners, we want to hear from you, so send us your comments on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at Song Talk Radio, or send us an email at feedback@songtalk.ca. Also, why not check out our YouTube channel for live performance videos and full episodes now that we is all virtual-like. Subscribe today to the Song Talk Radio podcast on your favorite podcast provider, and don't forget to sign up for our free newsletter at songtalk.ca. You can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned here on the show on the resources page. And wherever you are in the world, please join us online via Zoom for the next Song Talk meetup. Free to join on meetup.com. Free to attend. Stop by the site for the link. And most of all, we'd like to thank you, the home listener. You can follow me at philemery.ca. How about Neil?
neilmody.com.
And Michael?
Let me see. Proudfoot420 on Instagram.
And of course, KathyValentine.com, I believe, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's great. And stop by the website at songtalk.ca to browse past shows and to find out how you can be a guest. Stay safe, everyone, and keep on writing. Good night.
Cheers.